You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And Truth Quest programs are archived at www.givemesometruth.info. And I do want to start, before we get into the program, saying the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And my co-host this evening is Katie O'Brien, and our special guest is Don Nikoloff, and he's back for an update on a current article that may be of quite an interesting story here. You there, Don?
Yes, I am, Melody. Good evening to you and your listeners. How are you?
Hi. And Katie, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great, great. So let's go ahead and just get started here. And Don, do you want to just give a little bit of information about your program and website and where your articles are published?
Okay, well, let me give out my website. It's directlightproductions, with an S on the end, .com. And you don't need the www for that. Anyone that wants to read my articles that were either published in the Idaho Observer or on my website can just click on articles at the top of any page, and it'll take you to a master index. There's quite a few now, actually. Some of them are book length. So if you don't have the stomach for the truth and a lot of detail, a lot of facts, then I'd advise you not to go there. Now, the radio show, actually, I call it a show. I have this aversion to the word program because it implies that there's something being done to us, possibly without our knowledge or our consciousness. So I call it a show because I'm really showing things. And it's called Evident Footprints. It's heard Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 1 a.m. Eastern Time, on www.bbsradio.com, station number one.
And if there's anything else you'd like to add about what you do, just feel free to do so, because you are a very versatile person as far as your talents.
Well, I have a background in music, if that's what you're referring to, music production, performance, composition, and it's given me sort of a gift for connecting dots, because, no pun intended, you have to connect dots when you're writing music. They get connected all the while you're writing, in fact. So you get some practice, but more than that, you learn how things fit together, different instruments fit together, and there's an intuition that's developed from that, where you can hear the music, you can hear what the instruments sound like without actually hearing them play. And that can be transmuted into other areas like research. You get a feel for a story that's being told by the mainstream media or the government or some publication that's trying to portray an event a certain way, and when it doesn't feel right, when it doesn't sound right, and in my case, I do what we call going down the rabbit hole. I look for the things that are not staring you right in the face, and often I make some pretty startling discoveries. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So rather than talk about me, let's talk about this information. Go ahead.
Well, let's premise it a little bit that you've done some research prior to this latest article that you've written on the birthplaces of some of the presidents, correct?
And well, not just that. Yeah, you're correct in a general way. Not just the birthplaces, but the names, the families, the bloodlines, and the real identities of some major political figures.
Right. You stated it much better.
Well, I like being real specific about it. You know, that way people can't mince words.
Right. You know. So, and you did this on which presidents?
Well, I started with George See, I want to call him by his real name. George H.W. Bush, the 41st president of the United States, who was the vice president under Ronald Reagan during that administration. And he was basically a one-term president. We were led to believe that he was so disliked and so bad that that's what got Clinton voted in. We knew very little about the massive corruption that's been going on probably the last 200 years in elections. The public's basically hoodwinked. So I had done the genealogy on Bush, and it was a sort of a, not a trilogy, what would you call a four-parter?
I'm not sure.
a quadrology? Anyway, it was a four-part expose on the Federal Reserve, Circuit Chautauqua, Nikola Tesla, and then the Bush-Walker bloodlines. It was massive. It was a massive piece that probably would take up half of a book. And it was published in the Observer back in April, May, and June of 2007. It was that big that, you know, I was taking up four full pages of the newspaper every time they put it out. And I discovered that George H.W. Scherf's real name was George H. Scherf, Jr. And that's a long story in and of itself. I recommend reading it because I lay it out. And you can sort of see a sequence of how this government was undermined with spies and international bankers and foreign corporations that were basically parasites, stealing billions of dollars from the government. And they had complicity within our government. So it exposes a lot of that. And it's been confirmed as well. Then
where was George H. Scherf born?
Scherf.
Where was he born?
He was born in Dürlich, Germany, which is south of Leipzig. Now, I mentioned intuition, or did I? and my intuition led me there, but I was able to piece a trail to there, too, including an admission by George H. Scherf, Sr., that he was from Dürlich, Germany, to an INS official at Ellis Island. So it's confirmed.
And where was his mother from?
Well, I didn't go into that aspect, but in general, families in Germany tend to stay on the same property generation after generation.
Yeah.
Only in instances when they have lots of children do they leave the nest, so to speak, and go to other areas. In the case of spies and infiltrators, they do it all the time. So, you know, I can't really answer that question. I didn't concern myself with that. What I found was that there were no records. All the records were expunged.
Okay, now, then when you had finished that article, then you kind of took up with the current president, correct?
Well, not immediately, no. I had done the genealogy, I decided, on three presidential candidates in the 2008 election. And they were the three that I thought would be in the running at least up to two of them, obviously, up to the end, because you had two Democrats and a Republican. So one of the Democrats would still be standing. And I could see Hillary Clinton getting a position. So I chose John McCain, then Barack Obama, and then Hillary Clinton in that order. And I had done the genealogy on McCain and basically traced him to King Edward VII of England. But the family was sired at the time he was Prince Albert Edward. And so that was really where the trail led me to Glasgow, Scotland. And I found shipping records showing that his father, or his alleged father, we'll say, because it was it really his father, it looked like the king sired the whole family. So we had a guy, John Sidney McCain I, was called Senior. which was kind of strange. But nevertheless, because he had a son who was named John also. I discovered the name McCann, and I kept stumbling across the same birth records, John McCann, John McCann. Although they sailed as John McCann and then the alleged son, which was a second son of Edward VII. So they were brothers, actually, 20 years difference in age. He was sailing under the name of Albert McCann. And then we had John McCain being born in a hospital at the Coco Solo Naval Base in Panama, a hospital that wasn't built until some 7 years after his alleged birth. So he couldn't have been born there. But they snuck him in to the United States through the Navy. And in a more recent piece, I proved that he also, another individual who we will talk about in a little bit, I'm sure, did the same thing through the Army. And so I did the McCain genealogy, and Don Harkins from the Idaho Observer approached me and asked me, I should say the late Don Harkins, pardon me. He approached me and asked me if I would do the genealogies of those three candidates. And I said, why did you pick those? And he said, I see those three somehow being involved at the end of the election. Basically, he said the same thing that I had already determined on my own. And I said, well, I've already done the genealogy on McCain. I'll send you the text of that and supporting photographs. And I'll start on Barack Obama. And he said, what would you call a piece like that, a three-parter? And I said, the only name, and I've already given it a name, I'm calling it The Three Stooges Go to Washington. So that title stuck. And when the article eventually came out in The Observer and then on my website, it went viral very quickly. And it's still being talked about today. Then I did Obama and basically proved that all the documents, all the photographs are false, including the argument, what I call a Hegelian dialectical argument between Hawaii and Kenya. He was not born in either place, and he was not born to the people he claimed he was. Simple. Read the article. It goes through the whole background there. And the third stooge is Hillary Clinton. I've yet to release that because of you, Melody. And you got me sidetracked on a very important story. So I came up with a series of articles. The first one was due to something that you had sent me. Eisenhower 1952 birth certificate fraud revealed. And then I did a follow-up on a lot of research, several months of research, called Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhowers, which was two parts, and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates, which basically it exposes the whole fraud. And it ties in, believe it or not, with Obama's story in The Three Stooges Go to Washington. And it really shows our history from about 1860 all the way up through 1972, because we were infiltrated by foreign agents who were put into positions of power in various parts of the United States, given false identities, and then made part of a big clan of spies and infiltrators who were determined to take over the country.
So, in other words, you consider that a common practice to not only infiltrate the country, but to bring in those with a major background in key places.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, no one ever heard of Barack Hussein Obama, even when he was a senator. The only mention I recall of him was from Oprah Winfrey in Chicago. Now, why would she be talking about a politician like that? Well, she was playing a role herself. She was propagandizing and basically programming her listeners to accept this individual as a friend, as somebody familiar, because she had talked about him from 2004 all the way up through the election, and still is. Why is it, you have to ask yourself a question, why is it that this individual doesn't have to provide any paperwork to be the head of the corporation, the United States of America? Why is that? And why aren't we told that that's the reality of this situation, that it's that they have usurped our Constitution, they've defiled it, and they have violated every federal law that prevents this kind of thing from happening? And it's spread into the corporate sector as well. See, it makes up the military-industrial congressional complex.
So over 120 years in regard to them actually taking over, do you think this was planned, passed generation to generation, or was it just something that was opportune?
Well, in a way, they've taken many things over, but they haven't completely taken over, I would say that, and because the truth is coming out right now. We're in a period in the world where the truth in all things is going to come out, and they are ratcheting up their approach to trying to take complete, absolute, tyrannical control over all of mankind throughout the planet. And at the same time, we're waking up, we're learning the truth, and so there is this opportunity for us to stop this. But we have to act. We can't pretend like it's not going on. We have to take this information and we have to put it to use. I've been saying that from the beginning. It's the very reason why I do the research and write the pieces that I write, to bring forth the real truth about what's going on. So this has been going on, I would even say, since this country began, since it was founded.
What would you recommend doing about it?
What
can we do now that we have the information? How can we use it?
If I asked you that question, what would you say? And there's a reason why I'm turning this around. I'm not evading your question, mm-hmm. Katie, but I want to hear what you would do.
Well, I'm interviewing you tonight, so I would really
guys.
Like you to answer the question.
I can't answer a question with a question. Well, okay.
Well, you can, you know.
Well, the first thing I would do from my position is I would recommend that every listener who hasn't read these articles we're talking about to sit down and read them.
So get the information.
Get the information first, because you have to, if you're, what is it you want to change, or what is it you want to do? You see, this is why I sort of asked you that question. What do you want to see happen? And
that is what I'm asking you in regard to that. If it's been a 120-year plan.
Well, you didn't ask me what I wanted to see happen. You asked me what I would do or what we should do. There's a very – see, you're going to try to avoid answering this. This is the reason nothing's
being done. I'm
wanting
an answer from you.
I will give an answer. But in essence, I bring forth the information. Now, what do you think I would hope a listener to my show or this show or any show I would be on where this information is coming out would do or would consider doing? I would think, as we already said, they would try to get the information. Now, once you have the information, do you just sit on the information, or do you share it? Do you try to impart it to others? You tell other people, hey, I read this article. This is pretty convincing stuff here. If this is true, and this guy is still alive and he's still writing, this is pretty heavy stuff. We need to inform other people about it. So you are going to affect a raising of the average consciousness of the average person. by giving them information. If they truly read it, I don't mean skim through it or just take a look at the pictures. I mean read the words, because the words describe what happened, who was involved, how it happened, and how it was discovered, and how they're trying to obfuscate the fact that it was discovered, how they're trying to downplay it, or change the information totally. I mean, in the case of Obama, we've just been lied to over and over and over again. And my research points that out. Just by studying who he says he is and who his family allegedly was and how he got, you know, we don't have a shred of paper from this guy identifying who he is. We should be concerned about that.
Well, if anything,
need to know how this occurred. Okay, go ahead.
If anything, you know, when you bring about this kind of information, someone shouldn't take it necessarily at face value. They should do some of their own research and start asking questions. Because, I mean, this may sound a little off base, but not really. I just got back from a MUFON conference, and I didn't know what to expect when I went there. But one of the things that really came up and apparent to me was the fact that how much is enough evidence? And at the last part of the symposium was all the panel was asked if they were 100% sure or if they weren't sure and why. And there were some people, some pretty heavy hitters there with a lot of background and various studies and experiences, and some of them, you know, unequivocally said 100% sure, and then one or two of them with a very strong background said they weren't quite sure, but they didn't have a problem saying that, and they were still very active because they were still investigating, and these were some that were, you know, were produced looking over the photographs, and this is something that you've done yourself, Don, is examining it and having to weed out that information that isn't, you know, even close to substantiating something. But as far as I could, why I'm bringing that up is like with 9/11, I've heard tons and tons of information backing up the fact that this is definitely an event that was passed off as something else. And you have to say, how much is enough evidence before it gets to the point of, can you ever convince somebody who doesn't want to be convinced, let alone somebody that, you know, you can convince them with anything and they don't bother to, you know, check it out. So, I mean, we got to find somewhere in between.
Okay, that's asking a question which is really based on opinion or based on experience of those that are discussing this. You know, the participants at that event. And, you know, it's healthy to be skeptical. I start out with skepticism. In fact, it's my skepticism that gets me into this research. You know, I'm hearing a story that sounds very skeptical to me. And if I can go out and prove that what I'm hearing is a lie, I will bring forth the truth. I will document it. How many documents do you need to see to know that they're A, real, B, fraudulent, or C, don't exist? How many do you need to see?
Okay, that goes back to what I'm saying on the other. Even though I know it's not the same subject, I'm just stating that, you know, it is really amazing to see. I mean, we're out there asking questions, and while we're doing so, we're uncovering a lot of truths, not in non-truths.
Mm-hmm. Of course, and I agree with you. For the majority of the time that I spend doing this research and writing and disseminating the information, you know, posting it on a web page, which is a lot of work if you ever worked on a web page, in a quasi-multimedia format, you know, where I'm introducing graphics, I'm analyzing the stuff. I've actually got video to back many things up, or audio clips. So there's a wealth of information that's there. And my job is to put it together in a way that someone can read it. And if they're not sure, it's not up to me to provide any more proof than what I have in the context of the article or the investigation. After all, I'm the one that came up with the idea of doing the investigation in the first place. But then after I impart all that information to somebody, then they say, now what do we do? They want me to continue leading them. Okay? And it boils down, and you both touched upon this in your own way. It boils down to each individual taking responsibility for knowing what they know and being able to do what they do in life and taking responsibility for their life. We've given our lives over to this power, you see. They've subtly controlled us. They've taken rights away. They've curtailed our speech. They stop certain activities from happening. They make you jump through hoops to do something as simple as going on a two-day weekend camping excursion with your family without being harassed by rules and regulations and certificates and laws and all kinds of stuff that really they don't follow. They break them all the time. But somehow we're supposed to belittle ourselves and consider that this is proper social behavior. And I'm not talking about doing anything out of the ordinary. I'm talking about going camping on the weekend.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So when you see that you're not taking action on what you know, when you're not speaking out, when you're not getting the information to other people, so that we build a consensus, not just of opinion, but a consensus of purpose. You know, why does this country exist? Does it exist so that it can be parasitized and basically or vampirized? You know, have all of its lifeblood drained from it while somebody else gets rich and somebody continues murdering millions of people around the earth under the guise of giving them what we have? Democracy, they call it. If this is democracy, we have to run from this. Like they tell you, when you see an alien, especially a reptilian, they tell you, when you see one face to face, don't hang around. Turn around and run. That's what they tell you. That's what you have to do here from these people. Okay?
Well, China is a democracy, right?
It's Excuse me? You're being facetious, I hope.
No. Maybe misinformed, but no. I've seen that in the last 2 weeks, China being promoted as a democracy.
Oh, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. Where did you read that?
Let me guess. United States being put up as a democracy. It's the same skewer.
Yes. You're being facetious. You have to be. So,
so let's get back to your articles here and where Barack Obama leads into your current article.
Well, Barack Obama leads into my article because I was getting ready to finish up part 8 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington on Hillary Clinton, and someone sent me something in the email, a really interesting article about the fact that Eisenhower himself didn't have a birth certificate, and one was put together for him. In Denison, Texas. And that struck a chord with me. And I don't know if it's a C major or a C minor, but it hit a chord. And I could immediately connect something I had found about the alleged grandparents of Obama, the Dunhams, whose alias in Europe was Maduna, their spy alias. They were all Madunas. We had Friedrich Magdalena and Sophia Maduna, who became Stanley Armour, Madeline Lee Payne, and Stanley Ann Dunham, all with the last name Dunham. They spent time in Denison, Texas, and I thought, why? These people were leading Wizard of Oz type lives. In fact, they were alleged to have been born in Kansas, where Dorothy Gale from The Wizard of Oz was. And so I thought, boy, they're just pulling a fast one over everybody here. This is not true. That none of this story is true. And it led me to Denison and some other places that also were part of what I found when I went into some deep research on this Eisenhower issue. Now, the moment I began my research, the first thing I did was examine records at Ellis Island. And I found that Eisenhower had stated that he was born in Tyler, Texas. And the date that statement was made was September 27th, 1924. Now, the whole world is saying that he's born in Denison. Why did that document say he was born in Tyler, Texas? I knew, having already done the genealogy on two other politicians who had snuck into the country, well, I should say three, actually. Three other politicians who had snuck into the country were foreigners and masquerading as natural-born Americans, that there was a connection. And I knew I was going to find it overseas. That there was no doubt about it. My intuition on the basis of the name Eisenhower, which is a modification of the German spelling, which ends not in H-O-W-E-R, but in H-A-U-E-R, the German or the Germanic spelling. And Eisenhower actually would be considered to be a, some would say, Jewish name, but this was, to me, it was a Zionist name. He was not Jewish, but he was of those that practiced Zionism and Satanism. And that put his origin definitely in a Germanic country or part of a Germanic country. And so when I began doing that research, I couldn't come up with anything in Germany other than post-World War II stuff, which is rather significant. So I knew it would probably be Austria. And in fact, as I did more research, I started locating things and anomalies that pointed to Austria-Hungary. And the ruler of Austria-Hungary was Franz Joseph I. For 68 years, he was an autocratic ruler, a tyrant. He had his way with women, and he had, you could say, concubines. He had women in other parts of the land that he ruled that bore many children for him. And I was even able to locate a photograph to debunk the whole Eisenhower story on the state side, so to speak, as to who his parents were. Because if the facts were showing me that they were not even in existence, that these were just names, and they showed us pictures of them, I could possibly find who the source of the models in the pictures were. In other words, we were looking at compilations of David Jacob Eisenhower and his alleged wife, Ida Stover Eisenhower. And I began seeing just too many things that weren't adding up about where they were from and where they lived. And as I went and examined birth records, I found the same lies, the misrepresentations in databases for genealogies, for example. So just to give the listeners and you a feel as to how I went in that direction, there are many clues right there in front of us if you think about it, if you look. And in fact, I found both spellings of Eisenhower coming into the United States, making the claim that they were American citizens. And then I could find other information in other parts of Europe, again, that same area, Austria-Hungary, the region he was from was Solca Bukovina, Austria-Hungary. And he had many brothers and sisters. Now, that would be a hard thing to do if you were just a regular working man. Father that big, huge family. I mean, all you would be doing is working and making kids. But if you had lots of money, you see, you could pay people to raise these kids, and you could consider them part of your bloodline and train them to infiltrate foreign countries. These guys had done this all along. That's what world wars are about, and all the other invasions of other countries. So it's a, you know, there is a sort of a cookie cutter technique that they use, and when you get good at I don't want to say guessing, but let's say taking clues or having a hunch that something might be so, and then being able to come up with the evidence to prove it, is pretty convincing. You just trust your hunches all the time, and you find a lot of really interesting documentation to refute what we've been told and what's been put into the history books.
Well, often you found in your aristocracies that they would intermarry and make alliances between various countries. It wouldn't seem to be too far-fetched to be able to look at the other aspect of, you know, if they wanted to do it in a more nefarious way, to do it by producing the offspring that go over and do the bidding of the family the other way. And I've from my understanding that possibly may have happened with Hitler and possibly, was it, I'm trying to think of the other ruler's name in England, not ruler, but
Winston Churchill.
Yeah, Churchill, yes.
Now, Churchill is a big part of my research, basically because of Circuit Chautauqua. And then when you get into these genealogies of these other people, you find it rather interesting that somebody that comes up in the McCain story also comes up in the Winston Churchill story. And that's Jenny Jerome, allegedly a woman who was born in New York City, but she wasn't. She was a Zionist banking family in New York, but these were all foreigners who came over here. These weren't Americans. They were all infiltrators from the top to the bottom, all the New York banks. So there is a correlation there in the context of my research. I literally show that she was a mistress of Edward the VII. And that they used her to have sexual relations with politicians, members of parliament, for example, in England, to sway votes a certain way. And it was well known that Jenny Jerome was not very faithful to Lord Randolph Churchill, the father of Winston. So think about this. Why would McCain, being an infiltrator, have this special privilege that he's gotten throughout his career, when he was responsible for the deaths of over 150, I think it was 167 men on the Forrestal. He's on a ship of a Secretary of Defense, the first Secretary of Defense, who was murdered, thrown out of a room at Bethesda Naval Medical Center.
Now, are you talking about John or the father?
No, I'm talking about John. But
okay.
You know, everybody that saw his grandfather said he looks much older than he is. Well, that's because he was. That's because I had determined his birth date. He looks 20 older than he was. So when we saw pictures of what we were told was a 60-year-old man leaning over the railing on the deck with Admiral Halsey at his side, we were actually looking at an 80-year-old man. And he looks 80. And they said, well, it's from all the years of being weathered. He was allegedly in the same class as Admiral Halsey. But see, he didn't attend Annapolis. Neither did his son. They were brought in as infiltrators. All of them. They were brought in as infiltrators.
Well, we do know that there was a lot of our scientists were brought over from World War II and Project Paperclip. So that again shows a pattern there that isn't out of the ordinary.
Well, I would tell you that there were a lot more spies that were brought over than scientists. Okay.
Well, that I'm not
and it,
that
and
I'm it, not I, discounting. I'm just saying that, yeah. that there's a lot of documentation on the one, and I'm sure there is the other, because I mean, and when you're talking about, you know, a lady being used as a someone to have affairs with certain dignitaries to obtain information is, you know, pretty known thing to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, we're told how this happened when we found out about it, and it's, oh, well, yeah, they didn't want to let the Soviets get these scientists. What they're not telling you is that we financed the Soviets during World War II, and it was done under the auspices. A secret UN agreement was drawn up. And on January 1st of 1942, we were told we joined the UN on October 24th of 1945. That is simply untrue. And through the Lend-Lease program, we financed the Soviets. So although we were told we were the enemies of the Soviets all throughout the Cold War, and even at that time, well, you know, you can't trust the Soviets, but they hate the Nazis too, so we have to tolerate them. No, we were paying their way through the war, and both in cash and in armaments, and we're talking about tanks and airplanes and trucks and armored vehicles, amphibious vehicles, airplane parts, you know, all kinds of spare parts, money, what they called brown soil, which was actually enriched uranium. We gave them half of the enriched uranium that we had at the time. And the plans to build nuclear facilities and the plans to the atomic bomb. That was all documented. And it was documented by the guy that handled the American side of the procurement of this Lend-Lease program through the UN. So how is it that the Soviets are here accepting all this, and they had their people here? They were coming in plane loads and getting off the planes at Great Falls, Montana, and they were literally running off the tarmac out of the airport to, as if they knew right where they were going, jumping in cabs, getting on trains and buses, and being sent all over the country. And one of the places was Denison, Texas.
Okay, so carry on.
Okay, well, I'm sharing something with you here, because what we were told about what started World War II and our participation in it, you know, we were sabotaged from within. Our government knew that we were going to have a false flag event on December 7th, 1941, and that was Pearl Harbor. Now, this ties in with my Obama research just as equally as it does with my research on Eisenhower. Obama's alleged grandfather, Stanley Armour Dunham, actually applied, or I should say enlisted, at three different selective service boards in the state of Kansas. Who does that? No one has ever done that. He didn't go to even one, is the truth. They just fudged records to make it look like that really happened. And someone, they had certainly insiders in Kansas, because many of these people that came from Austria-Hungary were shipped into Kansas as farmers. They came over here as immigrant farmers, but they were part of this network from that area. So when Eisenhower eventually ended up here, you know, the story is that his father, David Jacob, and mother, Ida Stover Eisenhower, were farmers, and they couldn't make ends meet, and they tried a business, and they had a corrupt business partner. And so they go to Denison, Texas, and he gets a job wiping down locomotives. It means washing them. He's a wiper for the air for the railroad. That was a fictional story because he didn't exist. So that didn't even happen. If he didn't exist and his mother didn't exist, and I proved this through census records and conflicts of statements made in official biographies about where she was born, to whom she was born, when she went to school, when she met her future husband, how they had this baby that either spent the first 6 months, year and a half, or 2 years in Denison, Texas. Which is it? Let's flip a coin. But do you have a three-sided coin? You know, it's got, let's make it a fair flip. Which was it? Okay. Needs a three-sided coin.
Okay.
And I can tell you unequivocally that he wasn't born in Tyler, Texas, which he said in 1924. And he wasn't born in Denison, Texas, which was the news story in 1952. He wasn't born there in either place. And I can even show you that the name Ida Stover, the Ida came from the woman he married in Austria-Hungary, who was Ida Koch, or in German they would say Ida Koch, which means Ida Cook. And that is the woman that became Mamie Eisenhower when they came to the United States. So I'm basically unraveling the whole thing. But what was more interesting than going down through the whole genealogy of the family was coming up with pictures that showed that the photos of Ida Stover and David Jacob Eisenhower were really the photos of another Eisenhower who was a brother of yet another Eisenhower who is in this wedding picture, and they're relatives of the bride and groom in the photograph. Elizabeth Eisenhower was the bride, and she married a man who had a background with one of the uncles, one of her uncles. And her uncle actually is the picture. His youth picture was used to represent David Jacob Eisenhower. And the elderly woman, who is the mother of this girl who is getting married, was Barbara Zerowski. Now, let me tell you, I went through haystacks, more haystacks than they have in Amish country, to come up with that name. But I got pictures for both of them. They were both in the same picture. And when you align the photos, you see how they both age, but they still have the basic general appearance of those two people. So, any questions?
No, but I guess what I'm... Is there an easy way to transition over to the Lonnie Roberts?
Well, yes. One would have to ask, well, what is this issue then about the birth certificate? Well, Eisenhower basically came back from Europe. He had been appointed the head of NATO. He was the Supreme Allied Commander during World War II. He spent some time there, and I can guarantee you the time he spent was basically devising the plan as to how they were going to completely take over our government. And so they sent a bunch of people. They snuck them through like they had been doing many years before, 50 years prior to that. They had been sneaking people in this country, putting them in the banking sector and putting them in certain aspects of the military-industrial complex. So they had to set up this operation to function in Denison. Denison was considered to be an effective place because there was an airport there. There was an Air Force base near there. And they had already been working out of Tinker Air Force Base, something that I covered in prior research that I did. on Obama and the fact that the Dunhams spent time at Tinker Air Force Base. They were spies, and they actually were funneling supplies and equipment up to Chicago, taking it across the Great Lakes, and then shipping it maybe into Canada or other parts of the Northeast, and then over to Europe. So they were looting the Tinker Air Force Base. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. And the names even connect to the ship company. You know, the Dunham name via connections out in Hawaii and the West Coast in the San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland area. It connects all the way to the founder of what became the Bank of Hawaii. So all of these connections fell into place. But let me tell you, it wasn't easy. Now, how would they run this? They would need to have somebody who knew Eisenhower, and but no one else knew. Okay, they're bringing somebody from a foreign country here. No one knew who this was, but he was highly trained in being a pest. I'll say that much. He was not very literate in English, in the English language, nor in the English language. A grammar, and you could see this in his writing, of course, and I discerned that he started in Denver, and when I looked up his records, Lonnie Roberts' records, I found that he was issued his Social Security number in Denver. But here's this guy born in Denver, and he goes down to this little town in Northeast Texas called Denison, and I was highly, highly suspicious that he was the guy running the whole project. He fabricated a birth certificate, allegedly through Mamie Eisenhower, which was not true. We eventually discovered envelopes that were sent back and were in sequence with the dates to show that the election headquarters at the Commodore Hotel in New York knew about this creation of the birth certificate. And multiple newspaper articles in the Sherman Democrat alluded to the fact that it was noteworthy that this was a problem, but it was being handled. Nobody should worry about it. That made the problem go away. Never made any other mainstream media outside of, let's say, Sherman, Texas, and Denison, Texas. And as we found in our later research, those two newspapers actually merged together. So the operation, in a sense, is still being run out of there. It's just taken on a different dimension in the realm of electronics and computers and databases that hide real estate hijacking, and were supported through many, many, many years, probably at least 30 years of outright stealing from veterans programs and identity theft, social security, death benefits, insurance, the whole, anything you can imagine, any kind of scheme that could be concocted. And that individual even had the gall to give himself a different name because no one really knew who he was. All of his communications were via mail with anybody. So he wasn't a public figure. He had fudged a record of a business. I found out, I mean, this is amazing. I found out that the only person who could fudge that record of the city directory would be the mayor. And he gave himself the name A.C. Casey. So you have Lonnie Franklin Roberts becoming A.C. Casey, the mayor, in 1952, until 1953. Then he left that scene. He basically had to take over the town to keep the charade going about Eisenhower. And when you think about it, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Just when you would, I mean, I've interviewed some of the gentlemen, I can't think. His last name's Crosby the Third, Edwin Crosby the Third, about some of the VA benefits being delayed or not given to some of these soldiers, and finding out that they have straw men or straw names that someone else is getting their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different aspects to going on out there in fraudulent programs that it seems so unbelievable, and yet when you do start looking at some of these frauds, they go on around us all the time if you start looking for them. So.
Yeah. Now, I'm not reading from anything while I'm sharing all this information, and there's a heck of a lot more. But
oh, yeah.
That ingrained in my understanding and my familiarity with the topic is that deep that I really don't need to refer to notes. Occasionally, a name will escape me for a few seconds, and it's not convenient on the radio. Silence is deadly, So.
What kind of kickback did Lonnie Roberts get?
What kind of kickback?
Payoff?
Well, I don't have receipts, but you're talking of billions of dollars being skimmed from these programs. And have you ever heard of anyone over a 30-year period complaining about not getting their mail? I mean, it's happened to all of us at one time or another. You move and it's not forwarded, or you're living somewhere for quite a long time and your address is not updated amongst everybody. You usually will never see that mail. And yet you have congressmen and senators, state senators, governors, secretaries of state, all intervening on this guy's behalf to help him get his mail. And then to find out that the mail is being sent to fictitious addresses and to aliases. And Mel will vouch for me. Are we talking about fictitious addresses here, Mel?
That's what seemed to come up in the research on this.
Seemed to come up or came up?
Well, that's what that came up, yes. It was really perplexing to find that you couldn't find any of these addresses.
Yeah. Pardon me. This is not innuendo, okay? I arrive at these conclusions when the research basically hits a standstill and sort of starts revolving in a circle. It becomes clear that Lonnie Roberts had many aliases, and in the article, I name many of them. I just mentioned one, A.C. Casey. And you know what? A.C. Casey happens to be mentioned and I mentioned this in the article, in relationship to one of the more populated, let's say, congregations of the Presbyterian Church. They were masquerading as Presbyterians in North Carolina. And he had spent time in North Carolina. So this guy who was allegedly in the Army and was getting, he wanted his Army benefits, that was all a lie. It was all a fraud. But he was being treated at Denver's Fitzsimmons Hospital for injuries he suffered in World War I in Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Well, let me go ahead and say that you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN, LPFM Radio 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and Truth Quest programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And my co-host this evening is Katie O'Brien, and our special guest is Don Nikoloff, who has a radio program on BBS.
Radio show, I like to call it.
Radio show, sorry.
On BBSradio.com.
Yeah, BBS Radio, and then has done a number of articles, and were they primarily for the Idaho Observer? But you have them listed on your website at directlightproductions.com.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were primarily for the world, but they happened to get published in the Idaho Observer.
Okay.
So.
And so, and we're discussing this evening the births and lineages of presidents, and then some tie-ins with some other interesting information. And do you want to go ahead and say how you ended up with some of these letters, or that tie in with Lonnie Roberts, or
that's up to you if you want me to do that.
Okay. Well, it's just that, you know, in the after having found the article that had to do with the birth certificate of President Eisenhower being signed off by a judge. In other words, there wasn't one that existed beforehand. And then coming across these letters that from Lonnie Roberts to all these dignitaries throughout Washington, and I seemed like they were primarily out of Washington, but they were a lot of Texas dignitaries congressmen and the like that were directed to and from Lonnie Roberts, which there was, you know, over 35, because that's what we had left, but they had been found in a file cabinet out in the street after a house had burned.
Mm-hmm. And some of them were singed a little bit or had some water stains on them.
Right.
And they were from people like Dwight D. Eisenhower. We're talking about communications.
And
James. I'm sorry.
And Lonnie Roberts was mentioned in the article that I'd sent you that was talking about, you know, the judge signing off on the birth certificate. So,
yeah.
And that's what cued me in to look at these letters, because I recognize the name.
Mm-hmm. And if you recall my saying to you, these haven't been sold, have they? Aren't they around? You mentioned they were going to go up on eBay, or some had been, and I said, oh, wait, please, no, don't do that yet. Don't do that. There may be something very important, and of course, it was extremely important what you had, okay? And through great trials and errors, Melody scanned those documents and got them to me, and I studied them, and I started piecing the puzzle together. They were very crucial to the whole investigation, and they connect to other things today, too. So, you know, it was a very good deed you did for the day. Day you decided to do that.
It was totally coincidence. I just thought this is just totally bizarre that I should end up with something that ended up in the street and it tied in with this other article, and that happened to be the timing that, you know, there's a question about presidential birth certificates, and I just thought it was really a real strange coincidence.
And you had read the Obama piece and
right.
The three, so and the Bush article too, right?
Right.
You know, he fudged his. That was completely swept under the carpet. And he entered the U.S. Navy. They put him there. That was the idea. He didn't have to pull any strings to get that done. He fudged his birth certificate and said he was born in Milford, Massachusetts. And if I remember, this is off the top of my head, but it was something like June 17th of 1924, something like that. I could go back and look up the exact date, but the year was 1924. And this is occurring at the onset of the World War, which would have made him 17 at the time. But he was planned to do that, okay? And here we had exactly the same scenario. The facts weren't adding up. There were more discrepancies with what was official than what I was finding. So I knew that if there were more documents that I could piece this thing together, what it was, what it entailed, what the communications were about. And Katie is awful quiet in the background there.
Oh, I'm very much enjoying the interview. So please Go on.
Okay. I don't mean to
Well, I do have a question about Lonnie Roberts. Okay. You had mentioned that you had one that was born in Texas in 1911 and then one in 1922.
Yes.
Is it the same person?
It's the same person.
Is
what they did
what
is
he fudged on his birth certificate to get into the Navy?
He wasn't in the Navy, and he wasn't in the Army. The Army story was a concoction. He was in the Army in Austria-Hungary, and he received burning to his lungs due to chemical warfare. So they took him to Denver, knowing that they were going to bring good old Dwight, whose name was changed from David Dwight to Dwight David so that they wouldn't confuse him with his father. Now, his father was in Austria-Hungary in the palace, okay? So there was nobody to confuse him with. It was a lie. It was just a story, okay? Now I forget what the question was. Oh, Lonnie Roberts, number one, I called him, was born in 1911, allegedly died in 1989. Lonnie Roberts, number two, was allegedly born 11 years later and died 11 years later. So you're looking at 1922 and the year 2000. Totally another concoction, okay? But it was, and they were both Lonnie F. Roberts. One, number one was called Lonnie Franklin Roberts, and the other one, Lonnie Frank Roberts. Now, and number one operated out of Denison. When he changed his name and opened up another operation in Amarillo, Texas, he went by Lonnie Frank. They created a false identity of a brother, Luth, but it was through a series of aliases. There wasn't a Lonnie Roberts brother. There was a Loy Luther Seeley name that he used as his identity in Denison and registered a business there in a drugstore. And by the way, we found out that that drugstore did not exist as they claim, or when it did, and there was never a watch repair shop there. Loy Luther Seeley, a.k.a. Lonnie Franklin Roberts, allegedly ran that watch shop. That was nothing but a P.O. office box, and it was a U.S. postal box. That designated that mail go to him and someone would pick it up. Whether Lonnie Roberts picked it up or a courier, we don't know, but it didn't matter. It was clear that a guy that wasn't getting his mail at the post office from a special post office box was in deep doo-doo for some reason. I mean, you know, it's one thing if you're complaining about not getting it at your house. But they're intentionally all using a fictitious address. And we know that these every single one of the addresses was fictitious.
You get into the detail of the of showing the letters, and they start at a certain date and end at a certain date. And with this, Lonnie Roberts, it starts out with him trying to get benefits for a deceased brother, correct?
Yes. Now, the reference to the Navy was from this Loy L. Seeley name he was using as another alias in Denison, and the brother's name was allegedly Luther Loy Seeley, and he was supposed to be the chief petty officer on the, I want to say the name is something like the Soraya, I might have to refer to that name, but it was a ship that was allegedly involved in a Pacific
Leviathan.
Naval,
was it Leviathan?
No, the Leviathan was a ship that they had come on across the ocean. That sailed.
That was a different one. Okay.
The Atlantic. Right. Yeah, I know that because that shows up quite a bit at Ellis Island.
Okay, but Ernest wasn't the name that you were talking about on.
Oh, well, he used that name, too, okay? And Luther, or I should say Luther Ernest Seeley was the alleged name of the brother, and he used Luther Loy and Loy Luther Seeley as two aliases, interchangeably, okay? We have different addresses for them on Morton Street and West Morton Street in Denison, Texas, and we can prove that they didn't live there. They didn't live there. As the mayor, A.C. Casey, he created that false record in the drugstore. And the alleged house that he lived in didn't even exist. And also another address of an alleged partner that he went into business with there in Denison also was a fictitious address.
Was that Harris?
No, that was, is it Barton Road? The alley, basically. It's an alley. They gave an address to an alley, folks. And we proved that, or Barrett is the name,
mm-hmm.
Under the name Robert B. Harris. Okay, isn't that interesting? Lonnie Roberts, Robert B. Harris. So Robert B. Harris was another alias for Lonnie Roberts, which was also an alias. Now, to make a long story short, I determined the real name of Lonnie Roberts was Eugene Eisenhower, a younger brother of the guy I identified in Europe as Johann Adolf Eisenhower. Show us your papers, please.
So what is this all, how does this all tie together here? I mean, with them being this Eugene Eisenhower, and what were they supposedly up, or, you know, what were they up to?
Well, we alluded to that somewhat. They were infiltrating the railroad system. They were mapping the distance from town to town via the railroads, for one thing, so they could send that information to the Soviet Union, who was also being financed by our military. So this was sort of a covert operation that was infiltrating the military and the government simultaneously, as the banking system, as the unions, and the railroad union played a major role in that. I featured a letter from C.M. Gibbons, if you recall, who is allegedly the general vice president of what was called the Brotherhood Railway Carmen of America, part of the American Federation of Labor in Los Angeles, California. Now, I researched the address, and the address is actually in the area of Glendale called Eagle Rock today. It's a somewhat depressed area. These guys, and it's very close to the railroad also, they were skimming money through unions. They were creating the unions, and that was giving them operating capital for their subversive activities. And basically, they financed all this espionage of our railway system nationwide by collecting dues from people who worked for the railroad. Think about that. Everything was a scam, okay? They were scamming the veterans' benefits by creating fictitious people who were killed in battles that were publicized, but no one ever checked. Oh, you know, when they came back home, they went to see their families if they were lucky enough to come back alive, or they started families. They weren't looking up the records of alleged people who died, and you know who their beneficiaries were. And then this money was converted into real estate, too. They were skimming money from all kinds of government programs. A lot of it was VA benefit and through the creation of false identities. What a convenient way to connect and collect on insurance policies by killing a fictitious person. You know, it's worth whatever the policy covers. And this was going on at the highest levels of government. Lyndon Johnson played a big role in this. Tom Connally, the U.S. Senator from Texas, chairman of the Committee on Foreign Relations, was writing this Lonnie Roberts character. You had officials in the Pentagon writing. James Forrestal, the secretary to the president, Bernard M. Shanley, John I. Sullivan, the Secretary of the Navy, John H. Brown, acting Secretary of the Navy, Captain A.C. Jacobs, there's another A.C. there, Director, Dependents Welfare Division, Navy Department. See, the link is there. Why would Lonnie Roberts be talking to those people unless he expected money? And they created a fictitious person to represent that money and a continuing stream of that money. And then the local state representatives from that area. Oh, there's a rear admiral you had there, T.L. Sprague, U.S. Navy Bureau of Naval Personnel. You had A.W. Linden, the clerk of the Selective Service System, local board number one, Denison, Texas, telling Lonnie Roberts, imagine this. If we go by the story, he would say, Mr. Ex-Army Man, you have to fill out this form or have your employer fill it out so you get an exemption for military service. Well, if he was in the military already, he wouldn't have had to do that, would he? So that letter proves that he wasn't in the Army.
But it was kind of interesting that when you brought up the point that all these officials were signing off on these letters, when that would be one of their clerk's jobs.
They were personally talking to him, weren't they? Expressing an undue, mushy, schmaltzic kind of concern about his welfare and how important this was for them to be serving him and how they would keep tabs on the progress of his complaint and the resolution of his problem. Now, these were nothing. They were either lying and speaking in code. In fact, mail, the word mail meant money, okay? If you just replace mail with money, you'll understand what they were saying. He got his mail from Washington the next day, and his letters to Washington were answered the next day. So this thing about not getting mail was a total farce. They were just using a privatized version of airmail from Texas to Washington and from Texas to New York or Texas to Denver and other parts of the country, Texas to California, all with this Pony Express system that they had devised. And to claim that none of them knew this was going on is absurd. Either they were all lying or they're all a bunch of dumb jackasses. The only way I can put it. You know, and I don't know how many jackasses there were around. We may have had more mules at that time. But
it was probably the same per capita.
Yes.
There's just more per capita now.
Yes. So, and there were letters from the U.S. Veterans Administration and from different branches trying to track him down. They actually referred to this guy as AWOL from the hospital in Denver, you know. It's ridiculous. You wanted to say something. I know you're chomping at the bit.
Well, not really, other than the fact that I mean, there's other inconsistencies and some peculiarities with the way the whole birthplace came about. And when you were bringing up the Tyler, Texas part, and then they gave such little paraphernalia from Eisenhower's past, even furnished this place. It was kind of interesting how, you know, they made a big deal out of this out of his birthplace, and yet he didn't seem to want to recognize it too much and show up there too much.
Oh no! And when he did go up there, strange things happened. Like the city bought that property in 1946. Kind of interesting. Like they knew in 1946. That he was going to become the president in 1952. Why would they do that? What was he famous for, if you really look at the truth?
Well, but he was a general at that point.
Oh, he was a general, but this was all hype. This was all propaganda. He was despised. He was likely the reason why General George Patton was murdered. And we know that the Russians were involved in that, too. And that ties into this again, you see. Patton would have come back to the United States, he would have been the true hero. Eisenhower was what I take the word traitor and I put the word infill with a dash in front of it. He was an infiltrator. He was no hero.
Well, you know, I don't know on this, but this is a question that comes to mind because wasn't he kind of designated like the NATO leader at that point in time, which would be kind of an early beginning of how they started putting these regions together that are now being put together for their one world government?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you consider what I've said about him being the bastard son of Franz Joseph I, the autocratic emperor for 68 years of Austria-Hungary, and the partial cause of the inception of World War I, then you would have to say that Eisenhower was inserted for that role, wouldn't you?
Well, that part I don't know, but they're certainly pointing in that direction. And I mean, there's so many when you read your, I mean, because your article covers a lot of information, and it so people almost have to read this thing to even kind of put all the pieces together and how you make it flow into a storyline to make sense.
Yeah, well, we're jumping around a bit,
yes,
of course.
Right.
We're jumping around, but there's nothing wrong with that because you can invite me back to another show and we can discuss this again in further detail. No, I'm just kidding.
I'd be happy to do that.
Well, you see, when you're turning over every rock to make sure that what you're finding connects or that it makes sense, or you make some discoveries like the ones we made, just the letters themselves is enough to write an article this size, you see.
Right, right.
And I included the links there. And the whole reason for giving out my website and directing people as to how to get to these articles is so they read them. Of course I want them to read them. That's why they were published in the newspaper. That's why they're published on my website. They're there to read, and you can pretty much take it to the bank that all this information checks out. It's been looked at 20 different ways, inside out and upside down included.
So one of the things that you kind of conclude in your article is that, I mean, this wasn't the only place that you ran into this kind of pattern. And you brought it to another state and or other states and
Utah. Utah plays a big role in this, too. And the Mormon church. You see, they use churches as cover. And I'm not attacking people's religious convictions when I talk about the organization. There's been plenty written about the satanic rituals performed at many of these religious organizations. I don't need to go into that. There are others that specialize in that.
Well, we also, you know, they also know that, like, the Catholic Church was involved in the rat lines.
Well, yeah, you have a pope right now that played a role in that area.
So it's not inconceivable at all that they could use some kind of cover that way.
No, they've done this, and they're all in cahoots together because they're the ones that collect the spoils. You know, in medieval times, we were told that, or even prior to medieval times, that the Pope would instruct or appoint, you know, an army to go plunder an area, and they would bring the spoils back. And for doing that, they were given elevated status in society. They were given a title. And this carried on to a point where those that did that for the kings and queens of England finally woke up and said, hey, wait a minute. Why are we doing all this plundering and giving all the money? You know, our power is in our ability to plunder. Let's form our own secret society. And then you had the Knights Templars and groups like that came out of obscurity and made themselves major power players because they could threaten those whose tasks they fulfilled in the past with the same kind of violence that they wreaked on the rest of of the countryside. You know, it's not too hard to, you know, to figure it out if you really look at it for what it is. That is the general history of these armies that went around taking over territories. Why did they do it? The only reasonable answer is because they could, because no one could stop them. But the balance has shifted a little bit because information is important, because you can then accurately identify who these people really are. And then the game is up. You've exposed the game. They're cheating at the game, you see. But it's all cleverly disguised as world affairs and the economy or the financial system, which is all illusion. Everything they do is based on illusion. And it has all the workings of organized crime. Because in essence, what this is just organized crime. So they're going to do anything they can to get an advantage. They will lie before they tell you the truth. They will steal before they give to worthy causes. And they will infiltrate us with those of like mind, all the while smiling in our face, telling us that we have to be patient, that these things are huge problems, and they take 100 years to resolve, like what we're going through right now. This has been done time and time again throughout history for the past 13,000 years. So once you familiarize yourself with all this, you see how it all fits into place. They don't have to deviate from what works as long as it's working. The problem they have right now is we are figuring it all out. And because we're able to deduce what they've done and who's done it, we can identify who's likely to do it now. And you can connect them via bloodline, but don't take their word for it. Do the research and discover for yourselves who they really are. And you can start out by reading these articles, as Melody and Katie have suggested.
And, you know, there's so many aspects of this that are so totally bizarre, but at the same time, it's like you said, when you start looking at when somebody, if they are doing a spy operation or trying to infiltrate and change a government from within, they're going to come under all kinds of cover. But, you know, when I first looked at those letters, I didn't think a whole lot about it because, you know, although it covered a long period of time, this person seemed to be pretty dedicated to the job. It was until you pointed out that there was the inconsistencies that were, you know, fairly blatant in them.
Yeah, well, that's the discernment at work. And I'm not saying you're not discerning, but this is all inspired by an intuitive hunch that something was terribly wrong. And that first article that you sent me alluding to the fact that there was a birth certificate controversy is the first indication that something is terribly wrong. There should be no controversy over that. There shouldn't be. I mean, do you have a birth certificate controversy in your life? Does Katie?
Yes.
Do I? Do any of the listeners? No.
Well, I do. We can't find a birth certificate from my mom.
Well, how do you know
she's
your mom?
Well, she may have been born somewhere else, but it was one of those situations where she had a midwife at her house,
mm-hmm.
and the doctor's office burned down. There's no record of my mother until the Social Security Act.
Okay, that's a plausible reason. And, you know, in the case of Dwight Eisenhower, I would even give him the benefit of the doubt before I would arrive at the conclusions I arrived at. But my intuition, my gut instinct told me this stinks to high heaven.
Well,
it does.
Well, wouldn't it also kind of been a little bit brought on by the fact that you'd also, you know, done other research to question others' backgrounds?
Well, of course, but you see, I had the same gut feeling at that time, too. I had no real evidence. I literally dug it out. And I have to say, and you know, for those that wonder, when I use the word intuition, you know, it's inner teaching. It's that which you sense because you're more in touch with your higher self or the higher aspect of your consciousness. And that doesn't put me on any pedestal or anything. I'm just saying that I'm aware of that, and that's a principle that's at work. And you have that too. You have that sense, you know, there's something wrong with all this. Somebody might be having that problem with the information I'm sharing. Okay? But if you read it and ask yourself how I came about this, and I explain how I come about it in great detail, so that you can't walk away from reading these articles and think that I'm just making this up. That you see the trail. And in the case of Eisenhower, we were fortunate enough to find letters that really, really support this whole argument. So intuition is your higher self's way of basically operating outside the box. Forget about what they said he did and where he's from and all of this stuff. Let's really find out. This is possible. Why is that a valid way to approach it? Because there was no birth certificate. Now, it didn't say his house burned down. They didn't say that. So there's a difference between your mother's case, Katie, and Eisenhower's.
Yeah.
Okay. Neither, you know, but I've never heard of two different architects building the same house and having roughly a 15 to 20 year disparage, discrepancy, I meant to say, between two dates as to when this house was built. He never even lived in the house. He never even lived there because he wasn't born there. And because his parents, who, again, I'm repeating myself, but his alleged parents were not the people that they were purported to be. And the creation of this birth certificate for him or Barack Obama or John McCain or George Bush is equal to that, or Hillary Clinton, for that matter. And you're going to see Hillary Clinton tie into all of this stuff, okay, by her birth when that comes out. But I'm working on the golf right now, too. It seems like every time I get my teeth sunk into something that I'm finally, you know, which is finally congealing into a concise article, another false flag event happens. And we have to investigate that. Why? Because we have an obligation to figure out what's going on and share that information with the public. Simple. You know,
what do you think is going on in the Gulf?
Oh, it's well,
that's a whole nother evening.
I suggest you listen to my show from time to time, Katie, and I do talk about this to an extent, not to evade the question, but it's a Ponzi scheme. And it's designed to set up cap and trade. And I've discovered the paper trail behind it.
Well, we'll look forward to that coming out.
Yeah, it's as heavy as this other stuff that we're talking about. It's the truth about what's going on, not what you're shown on the media. And just like Eisenhower, I would like to go back to Eisenhower because, you know, the photographs are really important. We have all these CIA fabricated compilations of people set in unrealistic scenes with unrealistic props, unrealistic lighting conditions, costumes of all sorts, anachronisms that don't belong in the picture. Obama's wearing his wedding ring in a picture taken in 1983, and he got married in 1992. Come on. Six different colors of pants he's wearing and one pair of trousers that when you adjust the lighting aspect of the photograph, you can see that this was put together piecemeal with Photoshop. And people's arms are too long and their hands are too small and or a couple of fingers are 3 inches longer than they should be.
Now, this is going back to the pictures in your article of Barack Obama.
The same anomalies are in the Eisenhower pictures, too.
Okay.
You know, so this is why I bring this up. It's the same thing over and over. I'll point out an anomaly at the Eisenhower tour in Denison in a moment. But we're told the story that Mamie and Dwight met while he was on duty at the Sam Houston Army Base in San Antonio, Texas. And because of its proximity to St. Louis University, which became St. Mary's later on, they're standing on their wedding day, which occurred in Denver, Colorado. July 1st of 1916, they're also standing on the steps of St. Louis University, where he was the football coach, they say. Now, his picture at Harvard Uni- or was it no at excuse me I misspoke at West Point his picture at West Point in the football team is not the same individual pictured in other pictures. They're fabricated. Like in the movies, they created these pictures to make it look like somebody. Some of you listeners out there have actually gone to an amusement park or a carnival or some fair or something where they can take you into a photo booth and you can dress up like a cowboy or any kind of character of your choice and make you look like you like your picture was taken in the early 1800s, before they even had cameras, okay? They can make you look like you're some figure of the past. And they use very sophisticated software in creating images to support the lies in the genealogies and the lies in the biographies and the lies in the military histories of these people or their educational background, all these things. This is a Nazi tactic. It's a Soviet or Russian tactic that's used in their spy agencies, in their military. It's been used in organized crime as well. Identity theft is a real big thing in Russia. International identity theft. And they actually come into this country and carry out those deeds. They don't need to be in Russia to do them. They'll come right here and steal people's identities and their bank accounts right from under their noses. This is organized crime. And it's condoned and tolerated by those that are corrupt in the government because they're part of these clubs, if you want to call them that, these secret societies, secret organizations. So Eisenhower and his new bride are standing on the stairs of St. Louis University Hall in San Antonio, Texas, on their wedding day. And so they went from Denver to San Antonio, and then they went on a honeymoon for a couple of weeks in Denver, and then they went to Kansas to visit their brother and parents on their honeymoon. This isn't, you know, you have this ridiculous jumping back and forth across the country going on, and this is somebody who's, you know, being brought up. He's being groomed in the Army. And according to the photo that they represent there, I had calculated by proportion and all kinds of issues, depth of field, and really examining the photograph, even measuring the steps. It's standard 8-inch block. Dwight would have to be 8'3" tall. And Mamie would have to be 7'3" tall. Okay, that's pretty tall. Either one of them could have played professional basketball. They would have been hounded to enter some sport. Okay, it didn't even occur. It was a fabrication. This event was totally fraudulent, fabricated to support a story that was based on lies. Now, there were other photographs, including his West Point photograph. All of a sudden, this kid with blonde hair and a clear complexion has freckles all over his face. And then he goes from having straight hair in his cadet photo to having curly hair on the football team. Sort of curly, wavy hair. It just doesn't add up. Doesn't add up. And then when you really look, when you enlarge the photographs, you see that the hair is attached to a skull and there's a gap between the hair and the skull. Hmm. But when you see it shrunk down, it looks like, well, you know, that's him on his wedding day. And the window behind them is supposed to be the music room of their house, which is an alleged colonial in Denver, Colorado. And none of the windows from the outside of the house look like this window shot from the inside. In fact, the window is much too large for the house. And this is a totally fabricated picture. It's cockeyed. It's crooked. The subjects are not straight in the context of the photo. You know, it's just one after another of fake photos. And I was able to, you know, somebody would ask, how did you identify where that picture was taken? How did you possibly do it? Well, I had to read the biographies and all the stories about where he allegedly was. And once I located the place where he allegedly coached football, I found a picture of the baseball team of that school with the Detroit Tigers. And none of the people in that photo look like they're 8'3" tall. And these are professional athletes. Big guys, Ty Cobb was one of them. You know? I mean, these guys were huge. And even anyone, there was not one person sitting on the steps at St. Louis Hall who blocked the top, or I should say the bottom half of the doorways, the main entrance of the building, at the top of the stairway. This sandstone block stairway that leads up. It's got 11 steps. All the photographs are fudged to obscure detail so that you can't really see what's going on. But this baseball team photo told me a lot, because even the guy sitting on the top row are not blocking half the door. And Mamie and Dwight were allegedly standing on the bottom step, and they're blocking the top half of the door from standing on the bottom step. They'd have to be 8'3" tall, just measuring the height of the steps and counting the number and adding them together. Okay? So that's really forensic analysis. And by the way, the door is the same door in the picture of the Eisenhowers. And then he's wearing an Austrian army uniform. He's not wearing the American army uniform. It's Austrian, and I match it. Now, granted, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler pointed out to us that war is a racket and that many of the same sides are wearing the same uniforms. Because it's big business. These guys are just moving money from one company to another. And, you know, they're even shooting themselves with the same bullets, basically, manufactured by the same company. That's the truth about what went on. So when you look at these things in the context of how I'm describing the analysis of the photos or the analysis of the documents, that has to be done, especially when you feel that the dots aren't connecting. Their story sounds good, and it's represented by compiled photographs, but if they're compiled, they're fraudulent. They didn't happen in real time. Why should the photograph be phony? Really, why? If it's a true story, why should the photograph belie the story? And then in this case, merely their proportion to that stairway disqualifies them and the story and the photograph. Any questions or comments?
So this was quite the great marketing job.
Yeah. Don't you think they did that with the guy that we call the short-legged Mac Daddy in Washington.
What does that mean?
Well, a Mac Daddy is a word that's used on the street for a guy who's a pimp. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, that phrase actually came out from the Reverend James David Manning at the Outlaw Ministries in Harlem, New York. And Reverend Manning calls him the long-legged Mac Daddy. But I got to see a photo of him next to a very short young lady. And he didn't have his shoes on, his pumps with the high heels, or his platforms, if you want to call them that. And he looked rather short, so I started calling him the short-legged Mac Daddy.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of sayings that go on each dignitary that gets into office, if you want to call them that. Whoever takes the next office will get their nicknames, that's for sure.
Like Tricky Dick, right?
And but I mean, obviously you spend quite a bit of time on research on these articles, and are you working on one currently, or?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, I can't remember, was it in the first hour or the beginning of this hour?
Oh, okay, so you're still working on that one. There hasn't, but in the meantime, you did mention that the British Petroleum.
There's an article which I'm going to say is about 80% finished right now, and it's just a tremendous amount of writing and putting things in proper sequence so that people can follow what happened, because this thing began before the oil well blew up, and it's still going on, okay. Basically. And I allude to how it was done, who did it, why it was done, and the monetary reasons are right there on paper.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so you're going to be doing a program right as soon as you'll be switching over and doing your own program when you finish this interview.
Yeah, in about 2.5 minutes, I'm jumping ship, and I'm going to leave you two young ladies and get ready for my show. I have Michael Tellinger from South Africa on tonight.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to be talking about solutions.
Okay.
And his findings, which kind of interesting because he's put the picture together in a different way but come to many of the same conclusions I have. And I think people would be very interested in hearing what he has to say about this. He's an individual that has determined, like me, that we have to have a proactive approach to this whole thing. And you know, we joke around a little bit. You have to have a sense of humor, but this is all illusion. What they've done to us is just using propaganda and illusion, and they just keep repeating the same stories. But you see, the word is getting out. People are reading the articles. They are learning about these things, and they are starting to understand that, yes, we have been infiltrated, and if they don't wake up and do something about it soon, it's going to be a bigger problem than it has to be. Dealing with the corruption is much simpler. We already have things in place to deal with that. But you're talking about a lot of corrupt people, but they're outnumbered. Millions to one. So
the thing is waking everybody up from the illusion and getting them to start asking questions and not just accepting what they're being told.
Yeah, you know, anyone that wants to challenge what I've uncovered from my research is welcome to challenge it. There are those that challenge by attacking one's character. That is the method of the powers that be. Those that create these schemes are themselves the ones that hire a whole army of disinformation agents. Okay?
Right. But I imagine we better be bringing it to a close here, and I just want to say, you know, thank you again for coming on the program and filling us in on your current work, and for people to read your article again at directlightproductions.com and listen to you on BBS Radio. Your program goes from 11 to 12 p.m. Mountain Time Zone, and then your articles are posted on, like I said, your website. So, again, I want to thank you for coming on.
Well, I want to thank you for having me on, and it's good to see you again, Katie. Well,
you
or
too.
Hear you again, I should say.
Good to hear you, too, and I hope you have a great show tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, and I hope you have a chance to tune in, too. It'll be very interesting.
Okay, well.
Look forward to it.
Okay, good night, you guys.
All right, you take care.
Okay, bye.